The opening chapter in the book of Job tells us about Job's suffering, and it comes in a series of events. His children are taken away. His family members all die. His flocks, his goods, his house are all destroyed, and he's left bereft, sitting on a heap of ashes. His friends come to console him, but there is nothing they can do. And then in chapter 3, we read Job's great lament, which I think evokes much of the material that we've seen in these earlier wisdom chronicles and specifically in the Sumerian Job. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed his day, and Job spoke and said, "Let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man and child conceived. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. Let them curse it that curse the day, who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the door of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from my eyes." So the very day on which he was born should be cursed, that night should be cursed, and his mother should never have given birth to him, because nothing but suffering can come from existence. A very bleak, dark view of existence. Job goes on to curse the day of his birth and extends that curse to all of existence. "Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me, or why the breasts that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and have been quiet. I should have slept, then had I been at rest, with kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate palaces for themselves, or with princes that had gold who filled their houses with silver, or as a hidden, untimely birth I had not been, as infants which never saw the light. I want to be with the dead, with the great dead, with kings who may have been great, but they're all dead." So there's a philosophical reflection, much as in Shelley's great poem, Ozymandias, about the riches of kings which are now meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And Job closes this great chapter saying, "For the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is come unto me. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came." A common lament of the sufferer in this wisdom literature: terrible things come, and they are often the worst thing that they imagined. That's what happens. It's not just that they suffer, but they suffer in a very particular way. We can be reminded here of Dante's Inferno, where there's very specific punishment for specific sin. Now, this is not punishment. This seems to be random suffering. Now, how can we fit these texts which tell us of wisdom and try to deal with the question of suffering, into the general subject of mythology and our approaches to it? You'll recall that in the early lectures of our series, I presented four approaches to the study of myth. Myth as ancient science, myth as a reflection of history, myth as connected to ritual, the myth and ritual approach that we saw most clearly delineated in the Hittite text, the myth of Telepinu, and last, the psychological power of myth. And I think that wisdom literature, and especially the wisdom literature of the theodicy texts, can be best understood under this psychological category. Because really what they are psychological observation and advice. And I would like to fit these texts under the rubric of a kind of psychological and philosophical therapy.